What's your favorite candy when you were growing up, if you went trick-or-treating? A lot of folks, depending on how rural they were, maybe go to parties because it was different, you know, when you had to go long stretches between houses out in the country. Where I grew up in the city, it was a piece of cake. In fact, it was like feasting on various neighborhoods. Easy peasy. But not so for everybody. What was your favorite candy growing up? I want to ask the good doctor this morning, Dr. John Braccio, Regional Psychological Services in East Lansing, who's fresh back from that Spartan defeat in triple overtime. But we won't dwell on that. We will instead ask you about Halloween. Did you have a favorite candy when you were growing up over in Grand Rapids?
Well, Snickers has always been my favorite.
Aha.
Always. Now, that doesn't mean I don't like anything that's sweet, but Snickers was kind of my all-time favorite.
It was like
there was one around, I liked it.
It was like your go-to, right?
That or was my go-to.
Did you ever do trading with anybody else? Did you swap? Because it's right in the all-time rankings, and there are all-time rankings. It's ranked number 9 overall, Snickers. And my favorite is Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. That's ranked number 10.
So those are very good also.
But we're not making the playoff, unfortunately. The top, what would your guess be for most popular Halloween candy? Give it some psychological thought here. Most popular.
Well, my goodness, I'd have to think here a minute. Maybe a chocolate bar, Hershey bar, something like
No, that would have been maybe simple back in the day. The number one answer by Americans and kids and adults is Kit Kat. Kit Kat.
Really?
Yeah, crisp wafers of whatever. You can freeze them. You can let them melt. And, you know, they taste good melted, too. So there it is. But that has nothing to do with today's subject. Although, I mean, I suppose in a roundabout way, it might, because, you know, when you have what I call my better half, and I do mean that. My better half is my better half, my wife.
She's a great girl.
She is. She's terrific. She's long-suffering, low these many years. and that has been her burden in life with me. But, you know, you think you see everything. And I tell you, even when you have a good marriage, you don't see everything. You really don't. That's my belief. But when you're having trouble in your marriage and you think everything's good because there are no apparent signs, there might be some. Isn't that true?
Well, it's really true. And the more dysfunctional, you know, we live in a world where a lot of children are growing up without both parents, or even an effective parent might be a better way to put it. So often they grow up in dysfunctional homes. They're not quite sure what you know really functional really is, and often can have low self-esteem. Now, I'm not just giving a single pattern. I'm just giving a pattern.
But they don't have anything to compare it to is what you're saying, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That is true. And I think when you look at relationships that are dysfunctional and not working, one is certainly hitting has to be something. You can't have any level of hitting and pushing each other around. Whenever I hear that, I have a general rule which I give to persons I work with. You know, if you can't guarantee you're not going to hit the other person, then you really can't be together. And someone might say, well, Dr. Braccio, there's no guarantees in life. And I say, well, you know, if I've been 40-some years married, haven't hit my wife, she hasn't hit me. It's just that's just something really unacceptable.
Right.
Then I think we get into things like verbal abuse. People get to the point where they really almost get used to these things. They begin to see dysfunctional patterns, even if they came out of a functional environment and know what is functional. They get used to it. They get name-called. They get belittled. They get bullied. And this is another very unacceptable thing, and you can see it. You can see it when couples are together. And then there's also the kind of embarrassment and belittling somebody in public, even. This is something. And then the idea, if they're mad at
you. That one's a dead giveaway, isn't it? That's a dead. But my take is when I see that in public or even on social media between couples, which is I'm mortified by, I can imagine what it's like in private. It can't be better.
Well, that is true. And then you have the kind of holding out, like let's say you're going to go see somebody and you've made plans, but all of a sudden the person says, well, I'm not going to go. I'm mad at you, or you go yourself and you explain what happened. And these are the type of things that can really lead to bad issues, too, particularly if they're not worked on. We're talking about things that need to be worked on. Then don't offer emotional support. There's just no trying to advance the person, encourage the person, so they just kind of live in a quasi-environment where they eggshells. They don't know if they're going to be treated well. They don't know what's going to happen. Then you have the unconditional love versus conditional, meaning there are relationships where love is determined by how you're doing, how you're behaving, if you will, meeting a standard that can change all the time. And these lead to very difficult situations. You have the anger and resentment situation where people have a deep-seated anger. And I think, you know, I see this, you know, you see it in life where people are together, but there's an anger. There's a just slightly below the surface. There's somebody who's very angry, disappointed. And when that happens, that can be very destructive to the relationship. And then when you get into the blended families and you get into trying to merge families together, then you can see where someone tries to eliminate other family members, tries to find fault with other children, if they're grown children, if they're children with you. So you have all these conflicts, and that's one of the more difficult areas to deal with anyway in terms of blending families, you know, together.
It doesn't always work out like the Brady Bunch is what you're trying to tell me, right?
You know, it really doesn't. And I'm not just trying to sort out problems here. I'm just trying to give them. And another one is how do people spend money? There are couples that have plenty of money, but they can't decide how to spend it. And this doesn't seem like it should be such a big issue, but boy, it really is. We get into sexual intimacy. If people don't have intimacy, they kind of lose track of each other. They can be busy, or one can use it as a weapon against the other.
Sure.
Only the person behaves in a certain way. So, and then also in second marriages, the later in life, you see the push to change the will, change the life insurance, change where money, where assets, home going. See this all the time, Dave. It's really kind of sad. Someone will come in late in life and end up with the fruits of a long,
all the stuff you're listing here. How does anybody stay together?
Well, here's the thing. If people work, now, see, you've gotten to the end here. We won't even get into philandering, threats, ultimatums, dictatorial discussion. Here's what I think happens. A good couple, people that work together as a team for the future, they work on resolving problems. They do it themselves. They can do it with friends. They can do it with a therapist. They can do it in a church setting. But they're able to work and resolve their problems. And if people can try to remember what made them fall in love, which made them get together in the first place, and try to go backwards. In fact, even marriage encounter weekends can be helpful in terms of having people rekindle, find out what was it, why do we get together? And another thing, when you have children,
there's a lot of those, and they're frequently a lot of churches sponsor those.
Yes, they
too.
Do. And they can be. I've done that myself. Those are good things for marriages that are in good shape, or those that want to get better, is what it amounts to. But those are the things you have to do, Dave. You have to work at it. And I look upon a relationship, marriage, I look upon it as a garden. You have to work on it every day. It's one of those things, if you want a good garden, you want everything to work well, you think of the other person. You think of the 60-40 marriage. If each gives 60, each is going to get the same amount. So these are things that can lead to good marriages and good relationships. I have a general rule, you know, 50% of marriages end, 25% seem to just, they stay together somewhat functional, and 25% are very good. I think what people have to do, we have to be aiming to keep people together, because I've worked with countless people in a second marriage that will say if they just worked harder at the first one, because they realize you have the same issues in any relationship that you have to be working on. But by that time, it's too late, and often they're children from two different relationships. It's very, very, very confusing. But again, if people want to and they want to work on things, and if they're together and they have a spiritual outlook, that can also be very helpful in terms of pulling, you know, people together. But the thing here is I just see so many people willing to just give up on relationships. Well, we tried it. We didn't get along that well. And I will say, well, are there things you can do? Are there more things you can try to do? And sometimes people are willing to do that. When people do that, and they really do work at having a very good relationship, they're much happier. Life is much better if there are two of you working together, where you have some mutual love, and if you can raise your children that way, and if you have also, at least spirituality can be a very critical thing, because in terms of family and having activities with people that have a similar outlook. and I kind of have a view on a spiritual person, they may do wrong, but hopefully they at least know the difference between right and wrong. And,
sure.
And if in a marriage people can distinguish between right and wrong and they understand the idea of fairness, of love, of sharing, working, then things can be good. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we get into the verbal abuse, we get into the controlling, we get into the anger and resentment. We get into trying to separate parts of family one from another, the sexual intimacy problems, spending money, I mean, changing. It can really be a nightmare, but the most basic ones are the yelling, screaming, the separation, not working as a team, the clam, not talking to each other, just having a lot of anger and resentment. And we just don't want to, as a couple, as a society, be filled with people that way. It's far more important to work on things, be the good gardener of your relationship, and have a really good life. I say, you know, happy people, happy couples lead to good lives.
DrJohnB.com is the website. Podcast will be there. Regional Psychological Services, East Lansing. Always good to talk to you, my friend. Good advice today.
Listen, always good to talk to you, my friend.